On this episode of Baseball Barbacast, the first big move of the winter, Dylan Cease to the Toronto Blue Jays, 7 years and more money than I make in a year. That's for sure. Devin Williams headed back to New York to join the Mets. Ryan Helsley to Baltimore. Sonny Gray to Boston. And boy, this was delightful. We review our bold predictions from preseason and laugh at how many F's we get. Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world who thinks that Lane Kiffin should have gone to manage the Rockies. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. And the biggest coaching news in the sports world really does not have a baseball angle at all, and we will not talk about it on today's episode.
Beyond that, brilliant idea, which is Lane Kiffin managing the Rockies. I don't think they could afford him. I feel pretty good that that is out of the budget. I know the Rockies do spend more than some of the other worst teams in baseball, but spending $100 million on a manager seems like a bad idea. Jake, we have so much baseball news to get to while everyone freaks out about college football. We have mucho transactions. Oh my goodness, did a lot happen while we were gone. And by gone, I mean hanging out at IRL. We had a lovely Thanksgiving. Not together. We did not spend Thanksgiving together, but we did hang out on multiple other occasions. We hope everyone enjoyed their holiday break. We hope people enjoyed the time capsule episode, which we dropped last week. And we got a lot of great feedback on that, I should also just say. Thank you for everyone who sent in their suggestions. There were definitely some things that we totally forgot. Like, shame on us for forgetting about Jung-Hoo Lee. Shame on us for forgetting about... I mean, some of these we're not forgetting. Some of these were just Humpy. Like, all right, how much stuff are we going to do? Yeah, Humpy. The one suggestion, I forget who said it, but someone mentioned the Anthony Rizzo hitting the home run or catching... Moises Ballesteros' first career home run when he was out in the Wrigley Field crowd to celebrate it. So there's a lot of great stuff. So if you sent in suggestions, we do appreciate it. Thank you for listening for the sixth annual time capsule. We had a great time. So hopefully you enjoyed that. But we now return to the present. Although I will say at the end of this episode, we will look back at 2025 one more time in a very, very fun fashion as we review our bold predictions, one for every team that we offered up before the season. And boy, did those go mostly terribly. But we will have a good time looking back and laughing. All right. Enough preamble. Let's get to the news, Jake Mintz, because this now already feels like old news, but it is big news. And it is still not official as we record this on Tuesday morning. And that is our opener.
You can't spell Dylan Cease without ace. Or can you? Think about it. Dylan Cease, one of the more fascinating arms in the market this winter, has reportedly signed 7 years, $210 million to the Toronto Blue Jays. Now, this deal is deferred, pushing its overall value from like 210 to around 182-ish, but whatever. That's a conversation that I don't particularly care about right now because, oh my God, Dylan Cease is on the Blue Jays.
Yeah, I think that the deferrals are relevant in the sense that it gets it down to a number that was more commonly projected across the industry for all the smart folks. You know, we do our top 50 free agent list and we can talk about where we had Cease on there, but we don't really mess with the trying to project exactly what guys are going to sign for, but nobody, at least publicly, had Dylan Cease getting a contract that started with a 2. However, this is where the deferrals come in. And now, is it shocking? We can get into why it is or isn't. But most of the ranges were more in the 6-7 for 160, 180. And now here we are at 7-210, but the deferrals make it look more like 182. Now, I think a good place to start, as you kind of mentioned the ace reference there, is this number, and this will become relevant too as we talk about Sonny Gray later, the trade to the Red Sox. Is this number a reflection of Dylan Cease, the pitcher, what he has been, what he can be, what he should be, what the Blue Jays believe he can be, and where that ranks among other free agent starting pitchers all time, adjusted for inflation? Or is it a reflection of he's the best option this year on the free agent market, or one of, you know, two best options, three best options, and this is what the best option gets on the open market? I think it's somewhere in between. But let's talk about who Dylan Cease is and why a pitcher of his caliber would get a contract like this.
So Dylan Cease, what an odd thing he is. Now, arsenal-wise, it's a heavy two-pitch approach, right? Tons of four-seamers, tons of sliders. He's throwing that mix 82% of the time, right? He's leaning very heavily on those two pitches. He gets a ton of Ks, he gets a ton of whiffs, and he does a relatively good job of limiting hard contact. And I would say his biggest flaw is that he is walk prone, right? Now, over the last number of years, Dylan Cease has underperformed relative to what you would expect, given his fielding independent pitching numbers, given his expected ERA, given the batted ball data, all of it combined. Really looks more like a pitcher with an ERA in the mid threes than a pitcher with an ERA in the mid fours. That made him a very interesting character entering this offseason, right? Was he going to get paid for what he had done, or was he going to get paid for what he could do if you made a couple tweaks and the, you know, mother luck kind of swung back into his favor? Now, I think the other thing that's very important to understand about Dylan Cease is the durability factor. Now, does past durability predict future durability? Sort of, to an extent. I would say the alternate is true, right? I think past injury projects future injury, right? Where it's like, if a guy's hurt all the time, I feel better about him being hurt in the future. Now, Cease has been as durable and as reliable as any starting pitcher in baseball over the last half decade. And I think what that does is it gives him a relatively high floor. And then the impressiveness of his raw stuff, his slider is one of the best pitches in the league. And his four-seamer has gotten a lot better as the years have gone on in terms of like a bat misser. That gives him a nice, you know, not a ceiling, but room to project him being better than he has been. And I think when you combine those two things, and you take into account that there wasn't like a no doubt MF-er at the top of this market, that's how you end up with Dylan Cease getting a deal that starts with a two, at least in the headlines.
Which is important for his agent, Scott Boris. We will have a Scobo update coming up here at the end of this segment. But let's stay on Cease, and we'll get to what this means for the Blue Jays in a second. I agree with everything you said. I think, and we're going to have some ERA discourse involving Devin Williams certainly later on, but I think in Cease's case, it's different, right? Because a reliever ERA in 50 to 60 innings is very easy to kind of hand wave away and say, wow, you have a handful of bad outings and you're in a tough place, right? There, no matter how good you can go, as in Devin Williams' case, right, like scoreless for 22 of his last 23 outings, doesn't matter. Your ERA is still over four because you had a bunch of clunkers. Dylan Cease this past year is an interesting example. He did have one like catastrophic outing early in the year in Sacramento where he allowed 9 runs, and that kind of put him in a hole that was kind of difficult to dig out of. But the point I want to make about him is like, yes, the FIP is good because he strikes a lot of guys out. He doesn't allow a ton of hits. But we're talking about a pretty large sample.
Yeah.
Basically as large of a sample as you're going to get for a modern starting pitcher, because he has not missed a start in his entire career, of him allowing a good amount of runs, like quite often. And you mentioned that the hard contact is not really an issue, and that's mostly true, but he does not get a lot of ground balls. And so he's not allowing a ton of homers, but when you're walking a lot of guys and you are susceptible to the long ball when you are also walking a lot of guys, you're going to run into some big innings, right? And even though he's made every start for the last 5 years, he has never thrown 200 innings. He has never thrown 190 innings because the efficiency is just not there. And that is where when you were trying to look at Dylan Cease and how to talk about him, he is very difficult from a comparison standpoint because he has way more durability than a Blake Snell. But you say Blake Snell, oh, well, he walks a ton of guys, but he strikes out a lot of guys. Blake Snell is, when he's on, he's limiting runs. Full stop. He's limiting hard contact. He's getting ground balls. Like, it is really difficult to slug against Blake Snell. Dylan Cease, that's not necessarily the case, especially when he's giving you a lot of free passes. And so while you kind of know what you're getting because he's going to take the ball every day, and by the way, that is, we hope that's true. We hope every pitcher stays healthy. You can, and I agree that, yes, I'd rather pay the guy that hasn't missed a start in 5 years than the one that has been on the IL six times. But I don't know. We felt pretty good about Gerrit Cole staying healthy. We felt pretty good about Corbin Burns staying healthy. Those are guys, you know, here we are. So we have no idea with Dylan Cease, but maybe he is indeed just going to stay invincible. That would be awesome. But that's why I struggle with him. Is it's like, yeah, go ahead.
No, go ahead. Finish your thought.
That's why I struggle with him is it's like, I love Dylan Cease. I'm saying this all. It just sounds like I'm going to talk about why I think this is a terrible contract. I think that there is real value in just like the dude that's going to strike a bunch of guys out and take the ball every fifth day. That's awesome. That maybe is just worth $30 million a year on the open market. So very true, especially when you're the Blue Jays and you need a pitcher, and that's great. But from a run prevention standpoint, he's had multiple pretty good pitching coaches. Like, Dylan Cease is a smart guy, and I do believe the Blue Jays are going to try to fix things, but it's like, I don't know. Yes. He might just be this, and I think that that's okay, but I'm not so sure that this is a huge sample of someone that's just kind of what he is. It's a weird mix of valuable things and frustrating things, but I at this point, this is not someone that I am like, oh, well, clearly he's one. I mean, yeah, sure, if he suddenly learns a plus-plus changeup, after all of these years of making every start for 5 years with multiple pitching coaches who are considered good pitching coaches, like, I'm sure he's tried a lot of these things and it's possible that it's just not working and he's still really good. So that's where he is a conundrum, where it's like, he's clearly offering value. I've seen so much that I don't want to just believe he's suddenly going to post a two area. If he does it, I wouldn't be shocked because he's talented. But I don't know. It's not as simple as just like, oh, well, clearly he's going to suddenly super elevate to this next level.
So I saw a video yesterday, I think it was Eric Kratz on Foul Territory, talking about how, like, Dylan Cease going to Toronto, like, Pete Walker, the pitching coach, is a guy who gets the most out of his pitchers. And I think this happens all the time when guys switch teams, where we're like, oh, that guy's pitching coach is really good. But, like, guess what? I would say, like, 25 of them are now really good. And it's not as if Dylan Cease is going to Toronto from, you know, the Rockies or my old 11U travel ball team. Like, he had Ruben Niebla in San Diego and Ethan Katz in Chicago, two guys who for a long time have been considered like, oh, you give, you know, Ethan Katz or Ruben Niebla a guy, like, they get the most out of those arms. And we're always trying to be like, oh, well, in this environment, this guy, like, that might not, now maybe it is true. Maybe Pete Walker has, like, the combination of words and thoughts and ideas, and that pitching group can, you know, pivot on Dylan Cease and get more out of him, maybe. But it's like, why are we pretending like Ruben Niebla is not an idiot, clearly, right? Like, he's very capable and skilled at his job.
The reason we're pretending is because he just had a 4-5 ERA, just as he did after he got traded to the Padres, right? Because, yes, Ethan Katz is good. It's not really Ethan Katz. Whether it was Ethan Katz or not, the dude's best season was with the White Sox in 2022, right? And that was the year where it all came together and his ERA was low and he didn't have any blow-up outings. But a lot of the peripherals were very similar. If he had just had that season and signed this contract, or I guess it probably would have been a lot bigger, I don't think people would be like, wow, what's Pete Walker going to do with him? He's going to have a 0.5 ERA. It's like, no, we do it because he just had a 4-5 and we said, well, that'll never happen again because now he's in a new place. And it's like, I don't know. I kind of feel like this is what Dylan Cease is. He's sometimes the ERA is going to be higher because he's got things that make it higher. And sometimes it's going to be lower because he's got things that make it lower. And that's fine. That's very valuable. And we can now talk about what it means for the Blue Jays. But that's
let's not do that.
We shouldn't. Not that Pete Walker isn't going to try and give him some new thoughts and, like,
toys or
toys and say, hey, let's try this. And I'm sure they're going to work with him. And I'm sure it's not like Dylan Cease doesn't want to get bitter. But that's, I think that's why we end up saying this. Is it's just much easier to react in that regard when, yeah, he just had a 4 or 5 ERA for the second time in 3 years.
I here's just my last thought on, like, is this a good deal? Like, as Dylan Cease the pitcher, I think I entered this winter lower on Cease than you, and yet I like this deal a little bit more than you. And maybe that's because I've changed my mind on Cease in some respects. Like, I think he offers enough good things where it makes sense to pay him this much, right? Mm-hmm. Where he is going to make 30 starts. He's probably only going to throw 5 innings in each of those starts, right? Right. But he's going to strike out a lot of guys. And when you add in Toronto's defense, which is notably better than San Diego, particularly on the infield, you can imagine rationally, reasonably, a world in which Dylan Cease's ERA starts with a 3 next season.
Yeah.
And I think, like, okay, do you think Dylan Cease's ERA starts with a 3 or any other number in the number alphabet?
I think 3 is a good, I feel good about 3.
Yeah. And like, cool. That's great.
Any other number
in the number alphabet. Yeah. So as a whole, we want, like, Dylan Cease is not an ace, despite how I opened this segment. He is not someone who I'm like, game one of the playoffs? Hell yeah, brother. Like, Blue Jays Nation, let's ride. However, he is a good pitcher who could be better than he has been. And whatever, it's not my money. Speaking of not my money, I actually think the more interesting part of this entire conversation is the way that the Blue Jays are operating, or their decision to spend on Cease, their decision to spend it all, their ability and their willingness to spend in this context is inextricably tied to the season that they just had in a very unique way, right? It feels to me like the Blue Jays are just continuing this wave of momentum, both in popularity, in their fan base, and like notability, notoriety within the sport, right? Like, is Dylan Cease as eager to join the Blue Jays if they lose in 3 games to the Yankees? Maybe, maybe not. But it does certainly fit, like, Cease signing with the Jays fits within the narrative of their 2025 season to me.
Yeah, no, of course. And again, because it hasn't gone official yet, we have not heard Cease talk about it and his views of the Blue Jays. You know, this will be a cool, by the way, like, Dylan Cease, the dude, is fantastic, and I'm excited for fits awesome in great character. With just this clubhouse, this group of pitchers, whether it's Bieber, whether it's Gausman. I know now Scherzer and Bassett may be gone, but Savage and like these, this is good. This is a good group. We talk about the quality of the rotation in a second. The last point I would make is I understand why you said that in terms of like liking it more than me based on my comments. I was more weighing in on just like the is Dylan Cease about to unlock something amazing commentary as much as just like what it means for the Blue Jays. Because yeah, as we just keep the focus on Toronto, they got the money, they want to spend it, and this was one of the best options available in free agency. And they said they wanted to get a top pitcher. They didn't wait around to do it. And this is how you get it done. This is how you get it done, and this is how you get a deal done with Scott Boras in November, which is not an easy thing to do. We saw it with Blake Snell last year. I think that had some different elements involving Blake Snell having dealt with free agency before and probably not wanting to drag on the fact that Blake Snell clearly just wanted to be in LA. And so you saw that work get you know, come together pretty quickly. But clearly for a top Scott Boras client to sign this early tells me that the Blue Jays were like, yep, we're making this happen and we have the money to do so. And so let's get there. Whether that requires deferrals or not, if you get it to 7 years and over $200 million, when maybe Scott Boras wasn't sure, maybe he thought that was kind of the end game that he was getting towards. Now he gets it before Thanksgiving. You have to imagine that they're feeling pretty good. Again, more Scobo in a second. This Blue Jays rotation, because then the other part of this conversation is like, oh man, all right, well, where does this Blue Jays rotation rank? Is this one of the best pitching staffs in baseball? And it's a really interesting mix of pitchers where Dylan Cease included, I love a lot of these guys, and I don't really know what I'm getting for a lot of reasons.
I love the idea
of this Blue Jays
every
rotation.
Single one of these pitchers. The yes. concept and, of yes. these pitchers is so enticing, especially yeah. like Cease, Gausman, Bieber, or Savage. In my mind, Jose Berríos does not exist. And maybe that's disrespectful.
He's not an impact arm anymore. Yes. Now, he still took the ball a ton last year, even though he was completely injured and like not
around
for reasons I still don't totally understand. Berríos is still a big name because he takes the ball every day, which, by the way, that's another thing we should note. Seems like Toronto values this. Gausman, Berríos, Cease are three of the four or five most durable pitchers over the last half decade. So that's significant. But Bieber and Yasavage, God bless them both. We love watching them pitch. I don't know what to expect from either of those guys next year. Obviously, getting Bieber back, him opting in, and was already a huge kind of shock. But we're still working on a limited sample of what he really is coming back from surgery. And obviously, we're working on a limited sample with Trey Yasavage, as awesome as he was in the postseason. So those yeah. guys, it's like, we don't know. We just explained all the reasons why Dylan Cease's performance is going to fluctuate. Gausman's the one that I feel like I know what I'm getting. But if we really want to zoom out, we also need to mention that he's entering the last year of his contract. And another reason why you would invest so heavily in a starting pitcher right now is thinking longer term, past Berríos, past Gausman,
yeah.
past Bieber. We know Bassett now moved on. He has been such a staple there. Maybe Bassett comes back, although that's a lot harder to envision at this point. Scherzer, same thing. So to your point, I do like the upside here. Long offseason to go, trades left. Still, someone's going to sign Fromber and Ranger and sign Imai and so on. I like this. I like this. This makes the Blue Jays better. I like Dylan Cease. But to say that this is some sort of like stone cold like top five rotation is just I can't do that. I just can't.
Sure. What I like the most about this deal is what it makes the Blue Jays feel like. For many winters now, Toronto has been trying to reel in the big fish. And like Captain Ahab, they have been one wave behind seemingly at every turn. And that was the case with Soto and with Roki Sasaki and Shohei Ohtani, whatever, right? And after their invigorating, empowering, scintillating October, for them to immediately enter the offseason and operate like a big bad behemoth that they should be and have always wanted to be, that I find incredibly encouraging. And if I was a Blue Jays fan, that would absolutely fire me up. Now, what does it mean for the rest of their winter? I think this makes it more likely that they bring back Bo Bichette and splash the cash for that, because it just feels like they are operating with a certain like swagger in their step. There's a bounce to their movements. And maybe I'm reading too much into that with one transaction. I'm willing to admit that. But this is the way that the Toronto Blue Jays should have always been acting. And
well, they were acting. I think it just wasn't working.
It wasn't working. But there was no doubt here. This did not draw itself out. This is like, hey, before Thanksgiving, like 7 hours before Thanksgiving, Dylan Cease is on the Blue Jays.
Yep.
That's how this goes. And like, to me, if I'm a Blue Jays fan, it's less like, oh, what does this mean? Like, is the money, is the dollars? It's like, hell yeah, F you, we're the Blue Jays. Dylan Cease is on our team now. The money's not mine. Thanks for showing up.
Totally agree. I think, as it relates to Bo, we know that their top priorities coming into the winter were get a starting pitcher, keep Bo Bichette, and then add to the bullpen, I think for sure. Where the outfield comes into that, because they keep getting rumored with Tucker and Bellinger, is that just because they're one of the teams now that are spending the money? I think if we learned anything now, you know, we tiered the teams coming into the free agency being like, okay, who's throwing the cash around? We had Dodgers and Mets in their own tier at the top. And then Phillies, Yankees, Blue Jays. I think this is already telling us, like, okay, maybe we're not at Dodgers Mets level, but we might be closer to them, or we might be more. Well, we got Hal Steinbrenner talking about how they're not making money over in the Bronx, and the Phillies haven't done anything yet, right? Like, maybe the Blue Jays are closer to the Dodgers and Mets than they are the Yankees and Phillies. And
remember,
if that's the case, that's awesome.
Like, 72% of Canada watched the freaking World Series. Like, and the team is owned by the company that broadcasts the games. Like, they're doing pretty good right now.
They got a good setup. Edward Rogers is throwing it around, which we love. Okay, so last thing, of course, we have to do before we take a break. It's time for the Scobo update, the Scott Boris scoreboard, where all offseason long we take a look at the happenings involving super agent Scott Boris, and we declare them a win, a draw, or a loss. That includes, most notably, our first Scobo of the winter was his first round of stand-up comedy in which he talked about his clients. Remember, he called Dylan Cease, unlike the other Dylan, exclusively electric. We gave that reference
banger
a win. And coming into this latest edition, his first round, he had 3 wins, 1 draw, you know, and 4 you know, losses. He was 3-1-4.
Jordan,
again,
and after this current news, you could say that Dylan is tangled up in blue.
Thank you for that reference that I am pretty sure was Bob Dylan, but you're going to have to help me out.
Oh. See, Jordan hates music. No, I'm just kidding. Keep going.
This is one of Jake's favorite takes. All right. Scobo update. This is more simple. This is not judging him on his comedy, his puns, his alliteration,
This is what he's actually paid to do.
Stretches. This is, all right, was this a good contract or not? From Scott Boris's standpoint, is this a win, right? Last offseason, Pete Alonso, nobody wants Pete Alonso. That's an L for Scott Boris. Okay, but you get so-and-so to get a bajillion dollars. Okay, that's a win. Okay, don't cease. Well,
Alex
this one's
Cobb
pretty straightforward. Alex, he was not a Boris guy, but whatever, yes. Dylan Cease, 7 years, 210. Okay, deferred, 182 present day value. This feels like a win. Do we have to overcomplicate this one again? We'll have much more hotly debated ones, I'm sure, for his future clients, but I don't think we need to discuss this one too long. This feels like a win. What do you think?
Yeah. For a pitcher, and this is a silly way to do this, for a pitcher that has never made an all-star game to get 7 years,
which is
like that.
Hey, Brandon Nimmo got 8 years, and he still hasn't made an all-star game.
So, that's true.
So that's true. I think his second Dylan Cease-related win of the winter. And I suppose if Boris says something notable at the Cease presser, which I assume he will attend, maybe he could add another win, draw, or loss. But for now,
we'll see.
We will keep it a simple dub, which brings his winter record to 4-1-4.
Now, I also think that the contract itself clears the threshold, but I think he had another 10 mil to work with just because of how early he got it done. I think if you're my agent, I want this done in November. Like you get bonus points in my mind. That's all.
Yeah.
So this is an absolute W for Scott Boris. He is now up 4-1-4 as I pull up the English Premier League table. 4-1-4, Jordan, that would give him 13 points. Okay, that would give him 13 points, putting him in 16th in the table between Nottingham Forest and Fulham.
Okay. I assume they've played more than 9 matches in the Premier League by this point.
Yes.
So, it's kind of an unfair comparison, but that is going to be our score, and that is what we're going with the points, so that is helpful. All right, we're going to take a break. When we return, more news, more pitchers to talk about, a starter and 2 relievers. We'll be right back. Baseball Barbecast.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Over the last, really, 2.5, 3 years, few teams have confused and confounded us more than the Boston Red Sox. And they transacted last week. That's something we need to talk about. Sonny Gray has been a character in our lives now for a long, long time. He's the epitome of a veteran hurler. He is 36 years old. He first debuted in 2013, drafted in the first round of the 2011 MLB draft. And he is now on the Red Sox, dealt there from the St. Louis Cardinals. And before we hop into that, I just think we need to take a second as a baseball community to really fully appreciate this man's name is Sonny Gray. The most backyard baseball ass name we have had in MLB really as long as I can remember. And it is not as if his given name is like Sonald or William, right? And he was born on a sunny day and his parents were like, let's call him. No, his given name is Sonny. Okay. So his parents were either oblivious to or in on the bit. And for that, I am truly thankful. Now the news. Sonny Gray was dealt last week from the St. Louis Cardinals to the Boston Red Sox, the team that will now pay him. Well, I guess the Cardinals will also pay him a little bit as well as we move forward, as they sent $20 million to Boston alongside Sonny Gray in return for a pair of pitching prospects, Richard Fitz, who's, I guess, less of a prospect, and Brandon Clark, a very interesting arm that I'm excited to talk about. But let's begin with Gray and how he fits into this weird Red Sox roster.
Yes, and I think the money component is significant because Sonny Gray is making a lot of money. And you know, money, his Gray salary for this season, yes, is not low. And his contract was backloaded. The deal he had signed with St. Louis originally, you know, 3 years at $76 million, $31 million in 2026. I mean, that's way up there, right, for among the AAVs for a starting pitcher. And so that made him as a trade chip compelling, because while Sonny Gray has his pros, he also is the kind of pitcher where it's like, well, are we going to be willing to pay that much? Clearly, by sending a good chunk of cash from St. Louis, they were able to access some solid talent here in Clark and Fitz, who we can get to. But Sonny Gray, the pitcher, this is another one similar to Dylan Cease. You're saying, okay, well, how good is this guy really for what you think you're getting, for what you're claiming, right? If the Blue Jays are saying, boom, we need an ace, we got Dylan Cease. Okay, is that, we just talked about why that makes sense, or maybe it doesn't. The Red Sox were very clear coming into the season. We want a co-ace, a clear two, you know, number two behind Garrett Crochet. And this appears to be their answer. We can talk. I know you wrote about it, and there still remains speculation about whether this is their last big pitching move of the winter. But the way they're talking about it, and some of the early reports about how they're going to be prioritizing the figuring out their very strange mix of position players over the remainder, and of course Bregman, you know, bringing him back potentially, that maybe this is their big move. And as we just did with Cease, we can kind of do the same thing. Why? Let's make the case for Sonny Gray as a legitimate number two starter. I think it starts in a very simple place, which is that also unlike Dylan Cease, the dude throws strikes. He throws a lot of strikes. He throws strikes. He's got a lot of different pitches. Already, we are very different from Dylan Cease, right? This is he gets outs in totally different ways than Dylan Cease. Yeah,
Dylan Cease has had every combination of facial hair. Sonny Gray has never had facial hair.
Right. So a lot of differences. However, while he does not throw as hard as he used to, Sonny Gray can strike him out. Okay, maybe it's not up at 30%, but we're not just throwing it in there and just getting ground balls. I mean, yes, he's pitching around. It's more based on not walking guys, the run prevention. 26.3% strikeout rate this past year, 30.3% the year before. So while even though the velo has gone down, as Arsenal has gotten deeper, he's throwing more breaking pitches. That's where he's getting a lot of the whiffs. he has been able to strike some guys out. That said, because he doesn't throw very hard, this is really where he differs from Cease, is that he does allow some loud contact. He is very home run, you know, susceptible. You know, this year he did allow more hits than innings pitched. And as we project him deep into his 30s or even just the short term in his age 36 season, that is where you worry how much of a, all right, we're giving this guy the ball in game two. What are the chances he goes six scoreless versus allows four runs? That equation becomes a little bit more dicey as the velo goes down and he's a little bit more prone to allowing the long ball with maybe some guys on base. So that is my rough Sonny Gray overview. I think I like Sonny Gray a little bit more than you, but I also understand your skepticism where it fits in with the Red Sox offseason plans.
And that's what's important and why I'm a little down on this. Before the offseason began in earnest, chief baseball officer for the Boston Red Sox, Craig Breslow, when asked, said, our top priority this winter is to find an arm that can slot in behind Craig Breslow, behind Garrett Crochet, slot in behind Craig
behind
Breslow.
Ace Craig Breslow.
Ace Craig Breslow.
Actually, that's, right? it's funny you say that because he still hasn't hired a GM. Wasn't that a whole thing? Is he going to hire someone under him? And he still hasn't done that. So anyway, it just made me think of that. Go ahead.
Craig Breslow doesn't make a promise, but he sets an expectation for the fan base. Mm-hmm. The expectation that they will find a number two starter. And it appears that that number two starter is going to be Sonny Gray. And I think that Sonny Gray is a relatively underwhelming outcome given the various options that could have ended up being that number two starter that Craig Breslow effectively previewed at the outset of this winter. I don't think that that is Sonny Gray's fault, but I think that it is acceptable, understandable for Boston fans to be like, this is the guy? This is the number two starter that you said you were going to go get? Now, do I think they're going to add another arm above Gray, below Crochet? No, I don't. The reason I think that is because they have too many things to do on the offensive side. They need to spend that money to go get Alex Bregman. They reshaped Sonny Gray's contract in order to push some of the cash to next season, which tells me that the Red Sox, once again, are not operating with an unlimited budget, that they are financially hamstrung to a certain extent. And I can't see them paying for like Fromber or Ranger Suarez and going and keeping Alex Bregman or replacing his production with an offensive free agent, right? That is harder for me to see. And as a result, I'm just generally underwhelmed by this. I am generally confused by the way the Red Sox have operated. They have had some massive home run wins under Breslow, Crochet being an obvious one, and they have conducted some of the worst trades of the last half decade, Chris Sale for Vaughn Grissom. Jordan, before we finish up here, let's just give Cardinals fans, those of them that still care about baseball despite their team's stretch of utter mediocrity, who are Richard Fitz and Brandon Clark? I think people know about Richard Fitz because his name is Dick Fitz. Brandon Clark, though, is far and away the more interesting of these two players.
Yeah, because Fitz really fits in with what they've been doing already, which is like the Michael McGreevy type. He will pitch in the big leagues and he'll be fine. But as the Cardinals move into this new era, like they want pitchers to get excited about. And while there's a ton of risk with Brandon Clark, and I'm just going to bring him into this conversation, the guy they just took in the first round this year, Liam Doyle, now we're talking about stuff. We're talking about, oh, damn, like this guy's on the mound. I want to go to the park and watch him pitch. Cardinals haven't really – now, I know they had Sonny Gray these last 2 years, but the team's been so irrelevant that it's like, how excited are you going to get to go watch Sonny Gray? And he's – it's less novel. Brandon Clark's got one of the best just left-handed arms that we have in minor league baseball. The track record is very short because he's been injured. He's barely thrown any innings. So it's a pretty big lottery ticket. Much more likely he ends up with the bullpen. But there's some serious upside with him. Obviously, the Red Sox believe that they have enough other young arms that are closer to contributing sooner that they can afford to get rid of Fitz and Clark, who's farther away. I think what's important here, regardless of these two specific additions, the Cardinals are going to keep pushing. And I think that trading, whether it's finding someone to take Nolan Arenado, trading Brendan Donovan for some real stuff, maybe trading some other stuff, clearly Bloom is not messing around. And I know he had already some quotes, Chaim Bloom, talking about moving the Cardinals in this new direction of you know, being asked, all right, this is a rebuild. You know, are you asking fans to be patient? And his framing of it, which is, I know this is like good PR, but I think it's also true, which is that like, no, we have to go actively, aggressively do this as soon as possible so that we can get back to winning. And that is where the Cardinals were clearly kind of stuck in the middle over the last year and a half. Now it's clear that they are going to move this roster in a new direction. I will say this is going to, I think these moves are going to drop the Cardinals payroll to a place that it really has not been in a really, really long time. How the fans respond to that in the short term is going to be tough, I think, for Bloom and Co. to kind of deal with. Maybe they sign some one-year deals to kind of keep that number higher, but I expect them to continue moving. I expect Donovan to get traded. I expect maybe another piece or two to get moved because this is what it's going to take. I think they need to get the upside at the upper levels of the minors, and this is an example of that.
I'm really excited about Clark, probably too excited. The comp here just physically is, in my mind, is Amir Garrett, where mm-hmm. it's like this big athletic lefty with awesome stuff. Now, Amir Garrett never stuck as a starter and had some amazing relief years and some disastrous ones. I think that if you really believe in the Red Sox pitching development, or excuse me, the Cardinals' new pitching development, you can see Brandon Clark as like the perfect ball of wax that you can mold something special into. Like there is a, if it all clicks for Brandon Clark, which it won't because it rarely does, he's an all-star, right? Like it is all-star level stuff. And I am encouraged that the Cardinals decided to go that route, that they decided to send more money to the Red Sox in order to secure a better prospect. That's what's interesting about this to me, right? Like the Cardinals are going to lower payroll. Okay. Now they're going to reinvest some of that money in various parts of the organization as they try and build back up. And basically saying like, hey, we'll spend like an extra 10 mil to send to the Red Sox to get a guy like Brandon Clark. That is an aggressive move. And I don't think is the type of thing that they would have done under the previous regime. And is a sign that Chaim Bloom is maybe thinking about this in a new and refreshing way.
Let's go around the league and talk about some relievers.
Devin Williams has a new employer, but probably not a new apartment. Although he could upgrade if he wanted to, as he will be signing a three-year, $51 million deal with the New York Mets that was reported late last night by Will Salmon of The Athletic. This deal keeps Williams in the Big Apple, where he spent 2025 after being a Brewer for the entirety of his career prior to that. It was an odd year for Williams in the Bronx, where he got off to about as horrendous of a start as you could imagine. I think his ERA was above 11 over his first 10 or so appearances. He got much better as the year went on, was downright dominant in August, and reemerged as a trustworthy option for Aaron Boone in the postseason. No opt-outs or options on this deal. He does get a little bonus if he gets traded. There's a lot to pick out with this one. Where do you want to begin with Williams?
Yeah, again, you know, the ERA discourse continued. You say 4.79 ERA, what are we paying this guy for? I think for relievers, especially one who had essentially been elite in every season until this year from a run prevention standpoint, everyone has pointed out the underlying numbers and saying he's still missing a ton of bats. He's still really hard to hit. and the runs were really clustered. The weirdest part about his season is that he, you think, okay, when Devin Williams is bad, like, what's the problem? It's that he's walking guys, and then you're just having a series of unfortunate events that results in them scoring. Because we know he's not, you know, getting crushed usually. But his walk rate was, like, I believe, a career low this year, at least the lowest it had been since he's been a full-time guy. It had been over 12% for the previous four seasons. It drops below 10% this year. And so there's a lot. It was just a weird season. Now, I will say, I mean, Devin Williams had, this was not one or two bad outings. I mean, he had multiple, you know, 2 week stretches within the season where he just looked very hittable. Like, it was like, and maybe it was that he, again, this is, people have done far more deep dives into Devin Williams, what went wrong than I have. So I'm kind of just throwing stuff out there. I don't know if he was becoming too predictable. I know there was some pitch tipping stuff that if he was in the zone more than he should be, that is something with pitchers who have high walk rates that are really dominant, that sometimes it's like, hey, dude, actually, maybe you shouldn't be throwing it in the strike zone that much because you're better off just getting guys to chase instead of guys to whiff in the zone. He's getting guys to whiff all the time, no matter what. But this year, like when it was bad, I was watching him and thinking like, this is a worse version than the one we've watched. Clearly, the Mets, yes, and I think a lot of other teams were willing to say, this guy's still striking out a ton of dudes. He's still one of the best relievers in baseball. And I think that that's a reasonable take. Do I expect him to post any? Again, this is, as you just said with Cease, it's like, it's so funny because let's throw out his 13 games in 2019. He's never had an ERA that starts with three.
it's always been one or two.
It's one, two, or now four, right? You know, close to five. So, what do I think Devin Williams' ERA is going to be his first year as a Met?
So
I don't know, but I understand why he got this deal. I was not that surprised. He had this elite track record beforehand.
Yeah.
He still posted. He looked better down the stretch. So nothing about this really shocks me. We could talk about what a Mets means for the Mets, but that's kind of where I'm at on Devin Williams.
I need a sign here that says multiple things are true. Just the amount of times that I use that phrase. Because that's the case here with Devin Williams. Like, he was bizarrely unlucky in 2025, and he was definitively worse than he had been in years prior. Both of those things are undeniably true. And I think that what the Mets are counting on here with this deal is that if the luck bounces back to decent instead of disastrous, he will be a very effective reliever. He will have an ERA that starts with a three at the absolute worst because he was still getting chase and whiff and strikeouts at a downright elite rate. He did not meet, like, none of the velo didn't drop, right? Like, the airbender was still bending through the air. And I think that it is a sign that what teams care about when they decide to give out money is not necessarily the results. It is how you get to them. Right. Mm-hmm. And I think that is very fortunate that Devin Williams is pitching in 2025 and 2026 and not 2008, because I think he would have gotten less money. Now, what does this mean for the Mets? Now, the trumpeting elephant in the room is Mr. Edwin Diaz, who has been the Mets closer and best reliever for a number of years. He is a free agent after opting out of his contract at the end of 2025. Both he and the Mets have been pretty public about being interested in a reunion. The Williams deal, in my opinion, does not change that calculus for the Mets. In fact, I think it gives them more leverage as they go to negotiate and they continue negotiating with Diaz, because if Diaz does return, he will throw the ninth and Williams will kind of float around as the best reliever that doesn't close, something that Williams has been very open about being comfortable with. And if Diaz does bounce, well, then Williams is more than capable of slotting into that ninth inning role. In my mind, it is the Mets saying to Diaz, effectively, we are okay living without you. If you decide to go take a bag of money from the Los Angeles Dodgers, we will be okay. It sets their price at a point. I do think that when all is said and done, he will return to the Mets. But I think that this move gives the Mets a little bit more leverage in those negotiations.
I mean, I'm also just interested in it because, like, this reliever market's moving, and we got another one to hit here in a second with Ryan Helsley. We keep saying, like, and I've said it too, like, yeah, Dodgers, okay, Dodgers are going to pay Diaz. If you're the Dodgers, like, who else is giving Edwin Diaz the contract that he's looking for, you know, besides maybe still the Mets? Like, this is the what he's looking for, which is reportedly $500, which is basically what he got last time. You could argue why he should or shouldn't get that based on what he's done, based on that he's older, et cetera, et cetera. I just don't know who else is going to be in the Edwin Diaz market, except I guess we got to just, what did we just say earlier, right? Toronto. Is Toronto going to shop all the way at the top if they are looking for a reliever, or are they looking more in the Robert Suarez bucket? But I think if anything, we're seeing that, like, these guys are now going, and I think how much of a stare down is Diaz going to get in with the Mets and or Dodgers and or Blue Jays in the coming weeks? Or is he going to realize, like, all right, these are my options. They're all offering me something the same, and I'm just going to kind of pick the one. But yeah, I mean, for the Mets, it would be interesting to see what the fan response would be if Diaz still ends up leaving, right?
I don't think it would be interesting. I don't think it would be interesting. I think it would be angry. Like,
right. And would they then go chase the Robert Suarez or try to add more to the bullpen beyond Williams, or just say, great, Williams is what we need? Because you could certainly still argue that this is still a bullpen in need of one or two more arms, whether Diaz is there or not. But an option that will not be for them, which is probably fine with them based on how it went in the second half of 2025, is Ryan Helsley, who signs with the Baltimore Orioles for 2 years, $28 million. This happens before Devin Williams. And this has a player opt-out. So this is really a low amount of commitment here for the Baltimore Orioles. If Ryan Helsley is awesome, he's gone and you had him awesome for a year and $14 million. That's great. That's probably really good news for the Baltimore Orioles, right? That's kind of what they're doing. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, that's kind of what the Orioles are viewing this. Because if you believe in Ryan Helsley, that he can get back to being one of the five best relievers in the league, which is what he was for the three previous seasons, then giving him $14 million a year is a freaking layup. I mean, that's like not even a question. And so this one, talk about not coming, I love this. I think as far as the options for Baltimore and their situation, I love this bet more than paying Diaz or paying Williams this or whatever, especially if they're going to continue to add, which again, the Orioles are in a weird spot as well. But this one is one of the most simple, like, hell yeah, I'm kind of surprised he didn't get more, couldn't get more. Maybe he could have if he waited. Clearly this market's moving. So I know he was another one where it's like got unlucky, was also definitively worse, maybe was dealing with pitch dipping, et cetera, et cetera. I think view this in a not too dissimilar from Devin Williams, where it's like, listen, we got one weird year that didn't go super great. And the three previous years, he was amazing. So let's not forget about those. Relievers are always going to be volatile no matter what. But I'm in on Helsley. I think that this is a really good move.
I think the reason Williams gets one more year than Helsley is because of how he goes about getting outs, where if Williams loses a little bit of zest on the heater, you can imagine the airbender still being really effective. Whereas Helsley, the bit is he throws gasoline, right? Even last year when he was bad, we're talking 99th percentile fastball velocity. And so if that ticks down, you could imagine a world where he's significantly less effective. I think this is a great move for the Orioles. I think that Ryan Helsley has enough of a track record where you can feel comfortable committing to 2 years on him. And you're right. If he is as good as he had been in any of his previous seasons, he will opt out and it will be a one-year deal. Also, there's no beating around the bush here. Like, the Orioles have gotten a little cute in recent seasons trying to fix their bullpen. It's like, oh, maybe that guy will throw the ninth as Felix Bautista battles a mountain of injuries. This is just like Ryan Helsley is on our team and he's going to throw the ninth inning and that's that. That is an encouragingly simple way for the Orioles to go about it.
Exactly.
Their offseason so far has been a little odd to me in some other ways, where they've effectively added like $40 million in payroll already between last year and this year without anything that you would do a press conference for, I think, is how I'll phrase that. Maybe that's disrespectful to help.
Just the Zoom call.
We haven't broken out the podium yet.
Yeah, I don't think that is an interesting like way to measure the significance of a move. And sometimes it's team dependent and like, but it's so true, right? I think Helsley's just getting a Zoom call. I don't think he's getting the press conference.
Whereas like Ryan Yarbrough returned to the Yankees on a $2 million one-year deal. No Zoom call, no presser. If the Yankees bring back Bellinger, we're getting full press conference at Yankee Stadium.
I think so.
Right?
I think so, yeah.
Whereas that line is a very, very fun thing to think about. Maybe, you know, for a rainy, wintry day at some point in the future, we can dig into that. Let's take a break. And when we get back, we promise this is our final look at the 2025 season. It's going to be weird. It's going to be goofy. We hope you will indulge us. And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. To finish this episode, we're going to go fast and do a weird off-season look back edition of Turbo Mode.
Faster than fast, quicker than quick. I am lightning.
I feel the need for speed.
It's turbo time.
Before the year began, both Jordan and I made a bunch of bold predictions. That is not uncommon. Every prognosticator in this industry and others will make bold predictions before the season. Our issue with all of those bold predictions is they're not bold. They're not bold enough. They don't make you stand up and scream. They don't goosebump your arms. They don't raise the hairs on the back of your neck. And that is what we seek to do. And what we're going to do now is we're going to look back on these outrageous predictions, none of which happened. I think we could just start and say that right away. We went 0 for 30. Now, two of these have still not been determined, okay? Two of these are still TBD. We'll get to them. But I guess I could say we went 0 for 28. We're going to run through them in fast fashion, and we're going to give grades as we move. And we begin with – so just to be clear, Jordan, you did the predictions for the American League. I did them for the National League.
Yes. One for every team. One for every team. And yes, this was back in March. And so some of these also are easier to grade than others. But why don't you take it away and remind us what we predicted back before the season?
New York Yankees, Jordan Schusterman said that Ben Rice would have a 4-homer game. Now, he had a 3-homer game the year before that and was not very good in 2024.
And we did have 3 4 home run games in this regular season, the most I think ever. Ben Rice, though, did not have any of those. Unfortunately, he did not even have a 3-homer game, only a couple 2-homer games. I still am proud of this one because Ben Rice was very good, but this is still wrong.
I'm going to give you a B. I'm going to give you just a straight B because Ben Rice on April 29th had a 2-homer game. He hit home runs in the first and second innings. Okay. And when that happened, we were flooded with tweets being like, Ben Rice on the way to 4 home runs. There was a moment where this felt possible. This is as good of a prediction as we have on this list. So I give you a straight B. The Boston Red Sox, you said they would break the MLB record, the team record for most doubles in a season, which was 376. They did lead the league in doubles with 324, but that is a product of Fenway Park. The trade of Rafael Devers really hurt you here. It was tied for 95th most all time. I will give you, they did lead the majors. I'm going to give you a D minus.
Oh my God, this is way better than D minus. We have way more. This is at least a C minus, but it was not close to history, so that's fine. I think Ben Rice should Baltimore be closer Orioles. To an A, all things considered.
Okay, I'll give you
for some of these.
Revision.
Some of these are so bad.
Revision. Ben Rice, A minus. Red Sox, C minus. Orioles, you said that their pitchers and hitters would combine for 500 home runs, both allowed and hit. You tracked this all year. The Orioles offense was bad and so did not help your case. They ended up finishing 8th most in baseball for combined home runs with 408. I just... I think this is a D. Like, this is, you were wrong. You were wrong about the Orioles giving up home runs, and you were wrong about the Orioles hitting home runs.
They allowed a lot of home runs, but they certainly did not hit nearly enough. And the Yankees and Angels tied for the highest combined at 449. If another team had gotten closer to 500, that would have made me feel better as a plausible prediction for any team. But the Orioles did not get it done.
Toronto Blue Jays, you said that Bobichet would bounce back and sign a $250 million contract. I went back and watched this, and I was like, Jordan, that's not that hot of a take. It's not that bold of a prediction, because Bobichet is a good baseball player who could have a good season, and boy, did he ever. Now, this one is still TBD, and $250 million actually does feel improbable, but certainly conceivable. So we're going to go ahead and give this an incomplete grade and return to it whenever Bobichet signs. The Tampa Bay Rays, you said that the Danny Jansen thing would happen again. That Danny Jansen playing for both teams in the same game would occur once more. I'm going to go ahead and give you a C minus for this, because Danny Jansen was traded at the deadline again.
Yeah, that's true. But this was not a Danny Jansen. This was not about Danny Jansen specifically. This was about the idea of a player playing in the same game for both teams because there's a rainout. And I thought that the Rays were going to have a million rainouts without a roof. And they really didn't have that many. So that kind of ruined this. So this is worse than, I mean, I loved the concept of this one, but Danny Jansen particularly getting traded doesn't really matter. So I think this is worse than that.
Minnesota Twins, you said a gentleman by the name of Peyton Eales would lead the team in stolen bases. He did not even make the big leagues. That's an F. We can keep on moving. Royals, Bobby Witt Jr. You said he would compile a 12 F war season. Only did 8. What a scrub. I would give you a D on this because the prediction was really like, Bobby Witt finds another gear somehow.
And this still could happen. I'm Bobby Witt having a 12 F4 season is I could do in a future year. Although now I'll have to raise the stakes and say 13 or something.
D. Cleveland Guardians. Austin Hedges will not be one of the worst 5 hitters in baseball.
This is I was correct. I got this right. This was right.
You did.
You got, give me some, he was only the 8th worst if you set the minimum at 180 plate appearances, which is what he got to. I said you just set the minimum at wherever he gets to and say he will not be one of the 5 worst, which he had been for the previous, I think, 5 or 6 seasons in a row. And he did it. There were 7 hitters worse than Austin Hedges with 180 plate appearances. So this is a dub for me.
Hey. 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 Chicago White Sox, you said that Sean Burke, who started for them on opening day, would have a lower ERA this season than Garrett Crochet. And for a brief moment in time, you were right, as Garrett Crochet allowed 2 runs on opening day in his first start for the Red Sox, while Sean Burke allowed 0. At no point for the rest of the season did Sean Burke have a lower ERA than Garrett Crochet. Sean Burke was not even like a memorable part of the White Sox this year, really. So I'm going to go ahead and give you an F for this because Garrett Crochet was so good. like he was so amazing that this is an F. Detroit Tigers. You said that 3 all-star starting pitchers for the Tigers, Tarek Skubal, Jackson Jobe, Casey Mize. Skubal, duh, all-star. But Casey Mize was an all-star. Now, Jackson Jobe was pretty butt and then got hurt. But I'm going to go ahead and give you a B here, a nice B.
I'll take it. Tigers had a bunch of all-stars. I can't believe I didn't predict Javi Baez center field all-star starting center field.
that would have been so good. Javi Baez starts the all-star game as a center fielder is the tone where you would predict.
It happened, folks.
Houston Astros, you said that Cam Smith, who was acquired over the winter in exchange for Kyle Tucker and also some other stuff, would hit more home runs than Kyle Tucker. Cam Smith hit 9. Tucker hit 22. Cam Smith was like the worst hitter in baseball in the second half. Kyle Tucker was also meh. But Cam Smith was so underwhelming that I am going to give you an F.
That's fine.
Seattle Mariners. Rowdy Tellez hits more homers than anybody on the Pittsburgh Pirates. Now, the idea here is that Tellez was let go by the Pirates, joined the Mariners, and the Pirates wouldn't hit many home runs. And I'm going to go ahead and give you a C-plus for this. Now, the idea that no one on the Pirates would hit any home runs was very true, as O'Neill Cruz led the club with 20. Brian Reynolds at 16. That was the second most. They had the fewest home runs of any club in the league. Rowdy Tellez hit 17 home runs. So he was only three away. However, he was, jettisoned from the Mariners during the season. Only hit 11 homers for them. The other six were with the Rangers. But a C-plus for you. This was a cheeky one.
Texas I feel good about that one. Yeah.
Sebastian Walcott, a top prospect, plays more MLB games than Evan Carter. I'm going to give you an F. 124 games for Walcott, all of which were in Double-A Frisco. He did not make the big leagues. Evan Carter played 63 games in the bigs. That's an F. Angels' Kyle Hendricks allows 15 hits in a game. He got as high as 10. He did stink all year. I'll give you a D.
He did not allow as many hits as I thought he was going to. Like, Kyle Hendricks was not good, but the fact that he only allowed 167 hits in 164 innings is credit to him, and salute to Kyle Hendricks, who I know retired. So cheers to you, Kyle.
And then lastly, in the American League, the Athletics, you said someone would play for both the Sacramento River Cats, the AAA affiliate of the San Francisco Giants, and for the Sacramento A's. The two teams shared a stadium all year. 130 living souls appeared for either the River Cats or the A's this year. None of those souls appeared for both. So you went 0 for 130 on that front. This is a binary one. It's an F.
That's fine. I still like the concept of that one. Would you like me to review your National League predictions?
Please do. I'm going to probably argue for myself more than you argued for yourself, but go ahead.
Okay. We begin with the Washington Nationals. Mike Soroka would receive one Cy Young vote. Mike Soroka signed, surprisingly, to convert back to starting pitcher. He was good enough to get traded to the Cubs, but that trade did not really work out. And Mike Soroka was nowhere near the Cy Young ballots. I'm going to give this one a D for me.
Totally agree. Could you imagine if I'd gotten a Cy Young vote and put him fifth on my ballot?
Maybe next year. Philadelphia Phillies. Brandon Marsh will get a haircut. This one was funny for a lot of reasons. Jake really went off the board with a lot of these. There was a time when Brandon Marsh was slumping that it was like, man, maybe he should get a haircut. But he did not at any point. And so this is also binary. So I'm still giving this an F to think that Brandon Marsh would even consider this a possibility.
I think it deserves an F+.
Okay.
Just because of how bad Brandon Marsh was. Jordan, do you know that he didn't have a hit in April?
Yeah, no, I know. He had like one of the longest hitless stretches of the season, right? 0 for 40 or something, 0 for 35. So,
and I think that it got been the brutal time. Enough that that would have been the time. If Brandon Marsh during his, I believe, 0 for 38 stretch had showed up to the yard with a new haircut, you would have been like, oh, well, that, yeah, sure.
Doesn't that make this even worse? Because like, if he didn't cut it then, he's never cutting it. And so you might never want to predict this again. Atlanta Braves. Grant Holmes gets to meet his celebrity doppelganger, Danny McBride. Grant Holmes, again, this was kind of a bet on Grant Holmes being like a relevant character with the Braves. The two things that hurt you on this one were the Braves were not relevant at all because they stunk. No. And it sounds like Danny McBride, while I'm not super familiar with his filmography, it doesn't sound like he was like really out having a pop culture moment in 2025. So,
yeah,
it really would have required him to go out of his way, the Braves to go out of their way. I think this is still on the table in the future if Grant Holmes can hang around, but this is still an F. Did not happen.
I'm just collecting Fs.
Yes, you are. New York Mets. Oh, speaking of F's. Oh, my God. Jose Iglesias throws out a ceremonial first pitch in the playoffs. This was a prediction that Jose Iglesias would essentially flame out and no longer be playing baseball. And at that point, it was like, oh, but you know, it would be fun to come back and throw out a first pitch with his beloved Mets, who are totally in the postseason. Instead, Jose Iglesias somehow played in 112 baseball games with the Padres, including in the postseason. You know who wasn't in the postseason? The New York Mets. F minus, 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 minus. We move on to the Miami Marlins. Miami Marlins, this was probably my favorite one. You predicted that Valente Beozo would throw 200 innings. A lot of people listening, who? Valente Beozo was a very enjoyable rookie pitcher in 2024 for the Marlins. Soft tossing, short right-hander from Mexico. He threw 81 innings for the Marlins this year. That is notably less than 200. In fact, only what?
Three pitchers
in all of the majors 200. Threw 200 innings. Logan Webb, Garrett Crochet, Christopher Sanchez. None of those pitchers are Valente Beozo. That is also an F. St. Louis Cardinals. Nolan Arenado hits a playoff home run. This was the idea that he would be traded to a team that was better than the Cardinals, and then he would go into the postseason and he would hit a home run in the postseason. Oh, what a story. What a season for Nolan Arenado. Talk about F. Nolan Arenado's still on the Cardinals. You could run this one back next year if he somehow manages to get traded. But another F. Another F. All right, this one is fun. Chicago Cubs.
Jordan.
Yeah.
Do you remember the name of my high school baseball coach? I feel like that's me right now. Mr. F.
He did have a name, but they called him Mr. F. I was just to make
Call
sure.
Call me Mr. F.
Mr. F. He's going to be Dr. F by the end of this. My goodness. All right. Chicago Cubs. This was so specific. I love this one. You predicted that Pete Armstrong would steal home on Jackie Robinson Day against Yuki Matsui, lefty reliever for the San Diego Padres. This was based on a lot of things like, okay, we're stealing home, tribute to Jackie. Yuki Matsui can't hold runners. PCA is going to be crazy enough to steal home. He did steal a base that day against the Padres.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't believe it was against Yuki Matsui, and he also got thrown out that day. So again, he stole a base on Jackie Robinson Day. F plus, D right. minus. You know what?
D we minus. Got more F's coming,
so that's fine.
Call we'll me give Mr.
you that
D.
one. I love that one. So Milwaukee Brewers. The Brewers will trade for Wilson Contreras to pair the Contreras brothers, the Contrarians, as nobody calls them. No, didn't happen. They traded for Andrew Vaughn, who was just as good as Wilson Contreras somehow. Wilson Contreras, I guess, could get traded this winter, but I don't think it's going to be to the Brewers. F. Pittsburgh F. Pirates. Paul Skeens' dog, Rue, throws out a first pitch. This was just like, okay, Paul Skeens, he's a celebrity. His dog's going to come just like Shohei Ohtani's dog's throwing out a first pitch. Paul Skeens' dog's going to do that. Didn't happen. It seems like it's really more Livy Dunn's dog. I think Paul's involved, but during the season, I just don't think. I think that this is still in play at some point, but it seems like, I don't know. I think Livy's got other things going on. Like, I'm not even sure how often the dog is in Pittsburgh, if we're being honest. So we'll have to see. Cincinnati F? Reds. That one is also an F. Didn't happen. Cincinnati Reds. Ellie becomes the sixth player ever to win the MVP while leading MLB in strikeouts. Very strange season because Ellie De La Cruz cut down on the strikeouts, notably. So that's already an F. Did somehow get 1/10th place MVP vote, but he was nowhere near winning. And so I think this is still an F because
okay.
Was farther away from winning MVP and farther away from leading the league in strikeouts. So double whammy F. We move to the National League West as we wrap up here. San Diego Padres. Yuli Gurriel, remember him? He was on the Padres this season. Will Homer off of a pitcher who wasn't born yet when he debuted professionally in Cuba in 2001? Yuli Gurriel only managed 4 hits this season. He didn't even face someone who was young enough to qualify, although Daniel Palencia was close. And his 4 hits were not against pitchers that were notably young. That is another F for you. I want to finish with Rockies and Dodgers. Let's go to Diamondbacks. Diamondbacks, their new City Connect uniforms will reference Snakes Alive from their magical 2023 run. I really like this one, but no evidence of any Snakes Alive. Their new Connect uniforms were very purple. Did not include any Snakes Alive. That is another binary wrong.
Is that
for
an
you.
F?
That is an F.
Ah. That is an F.
The Colorado Rockies. Actually, no, let's do San Francisco Giants. This one, we're not so sure. The San Francisco Giants prediction. Buster Posey, Pobozy, will be spotted wearing baseball pants. Another one of my favorite ones that you did. This is tough because we did not see evidence of this. However, I think it's worth asking around to see if maybe there's a chance this happened. I think I would have heard about it. Yeah, and I off the top of my head, like I can picture Buster Posey like behind the turtle
cage,
definitely not wearing baseball pants.
Yeah, now
and so
let me be clear: the essence of this prediction was that he would be more of a field presence due to his playing history than the average baseball executive. And in fact, the opposite occurred where he executives all over the place. And so I would give myself an F.
2 more. Colorado Rockies. That the Colorado Rockies do not win a single game against the Dodgers all season. The Dodgers did start 6-0 against the Rockies. And I was like, this was a great one, right? It's 13 games. Rockies are historically bad. We thought the Dodgers would be historically good. But I always knew that Coors Field could be a pitfall, especially when you know that the Dodgers are capable of just, you know, screwing around in the regular season. And sure enough, they split a 4-game series in Colorado. The Rockies won 2 of those games. I believe it was in the second half. And so that was
in August.
The Rockies.
They got walked
off.
Yeah. So the game that ruined this for me was a walk-off, which really stinks.
Yeah. But that wasn't they did win again though. They did.
But the warming Bernabell single up the middle to score Ezekiel Tovar really threw this into the blender for me. I will say that the Rockies did finish 2-11 against the Dodgers, which is terrible. They went 0-6 in LA. And I think I'm going to make this exact same prediction next week.
Okay. Paul DePodesta feels disrespected.
You're on notice.
Feels Paul disrespected. All right. The last prediction was the Los Angeles Dodgers. Oh, what did Jake predict? That they would win 130 games? Oh, that they would win the World Series again? That Yamamoto would pitch in the World Series on 0 days rest?
I said no. Miguel Rojas.
Would Homer off
Jeff Hoffman. Homer up Jeff Hoffman. Oh, but I said it was going to be in fastball slider.
Oh, in Toronto, Blue Jays home field advantage in the World Series over the Dodgers. Jake got all those
Nailed
things.
It.
No, hey. He didn't. His prediction was that Shohei Ohtani, who welcomed the birth of his first child this year, would name his child after Mike Trout, his past pal with the Angels. This was a wild prediction. But good news for Jake, we still don't know what Ohtani's kid's name is yet. We know that it is a baby girl. But Shohei, ever the private superstar, totally understandably, has not shared his baby's name with the public. So maybe the baby is named Mike Trout or after Mike Trout.
Mike Trout Ohtani. We don't know.
I will say this. I will say
for most of these predictions, I was definitively wrong. But for this one, I'm not definitively wrong. So I've had some Fs. And on that I've had some F minuses. I've had some F pluses. I will give myself an F question mark.
F question mark. F? Mr. F, ladies and gentlemen. he really crushed it. I will happily take my Austin Hedges, not one of the five worst hitters, maybe Bo Bichette signs for $250 million as a massive dub in this bold prediction game.
I think that going 0 for 30, or I guess 1 for 20, 1 for 30, is the point of this, right?
Yes.
Like, all of you people, your bold predictions are cowardly, they're cold, they're arctic, they're uninteresting, right? Come stand with us in the land of flaming takes. Okay?
On the wild side.
And I hope... I live on the wild side, right? I hope that next year, Jordan, I go over 15 again and I make you giggle along the way.
Hashtag goals. All right, that's it. What a pod. Thank you all for listening. We will be back on Thursday.
Ooh,
fun. Little schedule change. Again, Tuesday, Friday through most of the offseason, but we'll be back on Thursday. I believe we got a special guest coming for that. Looking forward to that. Then Jake and I are going to the Dominican Republic, where we'll be for a few days before the winter meetings. So we will talk to you on Thursday, and then we will talk to you next week from Orlando, Florida, where the transactions will hopefully get going even more so. But if not, we'll just talk about the draft lottery. Thank you to Andrew Hartz and Ingrid Rosas for producing. You can email us, baseballbarbercast@gmail.com. We appreciate listening, watching, listening, liking, subscribing, all the things you do to support us. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you all soon.
Big 5-1 victory last night for the Sabres. See you, folks.